My, how quickly things can change. Happy hump day, everybody. Welcome in to the show, Graham. I'm Adam Alter alongside Chris Bond. Oh, where do we even begin today, Chris?
You remember last week when we were talking about you had let fans talk you into Arkansas being in the top 10?
Yes, I do.
I was astounded that anyone could have Arkansas ranked behind Georgia.
Yeah,
remember that?
I do remember that.
Man, those were the days, huh?
I got to tell you, I really feel like a sucker.
You should.
Because, you know, I've been following this team for all the way back to the spring when all the turmoil happened and through spring practice and through preseason camp. And I bought in. I believed what they were saying. I believed this team could have what it takes to get over the hump against maybe an Alabama and get into the real contender conversation. Even after that subpar performance against Jacksonville State, where the defense looked so flawed, I chalked it up to first game jitters, and they're still finding their way. I got suckered. This team stinks. They stink.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not very good.
No.
And I mean, I guess I could say right now, so I can cover myself. So, you know, if they go on some kind of wild run after the Alabama game and win some games and they wind up, you know, let's say they wind up going, maybe they pull out a Cotton Bowl or something. So I'll add the right now. But we knew going into the year, we knew there were going to be some deficiencies on defense, and we knew the offensive line was not as deep as what it needed to be. And I tried to make everybody feel better about there being two walk-ons. It's not unusual for a guy in his fourth or fifth year to, you know, that walked on as an offensive lineman to develop into something. You know, but I will say this. We did try to warn people that a defense, as bad as Arkansas's defense was last year at times, a defense does not lose its four best playmakers at four different positions and come away from that without some growing pains. And people would get really mad when you pointed that out. Oh, you know, and when you say, well, the Kansas State was not a really good indicator because Arkansas had those four playmakers. They were really not a top 10 team. They were kind of Mississippi State-ish. Don't read too much into that Cotton Bowl win and how the defense played. Even saying all that and making people mad, I had no idea that it was going to be like this. This has been it's just astounding. I don't know any other way to put it.
The defense, look, in this era, which I'm still calling it the Bobby Petrino era, because for all intents and purposes, this is the team he built and it's his system on the field.
Oh, and his staff. Don't forget that. This is his coaching staff.
This is the worst defense in this era. And we've seen them struggle on that side of the ball basically from the outshoot. This is taking it to a whole new level. They're out of position.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as athletic as they need to be.
There's no depth.
There's very little depth. And, you know, I bought into Paul Haynes coming in here and kind of righting the ship from the stuff, you know, Voldemort, Willie Robinson had put in place and maybe overcomplicated things. And Paul Haynes said all the right things. We're going to simplify and we're going to stop the run and we're going to tackle. Well, they're not doing any of that. And they're certainly not stopping the passing game. They gave up 550 yards to Louisiana Monroe. That is a staggering amount, Chris.
Yeah, not passing, but total yards.
Total yards.
They're giving up an average of 320 yards through the air, which ranks 108th.
And they haven't played anybody.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. And that's when you start looking at you know, you start looking ahead and Alabama and A.J. McCarron's got six touchdowns. He hasn't thrown a pick yet. Alabama's one of the best in the country right now in terms of pass efficiency. It's scary. I mean, it's because Alabama now, you're used to them lining up and just running it down your throat. They've shown they can go vertical mm-hmm. on people this year. And they've shown they can go vertical on defenses a lot better than what they're about to face Saturday.
That was their whole game plan against LSU in the national title game. You know, everyone expected a heavy dose of Trent Richardson and Eddie Lacy, and they came out on first and second down and put the ball in A.J. McCarron's hands, and that's against the LSU defense, which was arguably the best in the country outside of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's, you know, think about how much confidence that gives a guy like McCarron, and clearly that's showing on the field so far this year.
Yeah.
A dominant victory over a, you know, probably overrated at the time, but a still pretty good Michigan team. And then, you know, obviously they wiped out Western Kentucky, but that's not the point. I mean,
right. Well, they did to Western Kentucky what Arkansas should have done to Louisiana Monroe.
Yeah.
A team that was picked sixth in the 10-team Sun Belt Conference by the Sun Belt Conference coaches.
And you know what? Maybe the Warhawks will go undefeated, you know, in the Sun Belt, and this won't look quite as bad as it does right now on September 12th, but it doesn't change the fact that this defense completely looks overmatched mm-hmm. against
nobody.
Everybody. I mean, if Jacksonville State can score 24 and Louisiana Monroe can score 34 and 500-plus yards of offense, what are the SEC teams going to do, particularly Alabama? This has the potential to be embarrassing. Even more embarrassing than the program's already feeling.
No, well, no. No, it won't be any more embarrassing than what the program's already feeling.
If it's 50 to nothing?
Yeah, I mean, it could be, even if it's 50 to nothing. I mean, Arkansas, as it stands right now, is 4 or 5 days removed from the worst loss in the history of the program.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you on that. It's the
Period.
Worst loss in the history of Arkansas football.
The 69 shootout, number one Texas, number two Arkansas. Arkansas loses, I think it was maybe a 13-0 lead, 13-10, I can't remember exactly.
Is that the James Street game?
They lose a lead. Texas comes back. I apologize for not having my history from 100 years ago on point. So they lose that game. That is the most heartbreaking loss in school history.
But that's 1-2.
Right. The Citadel was really bad because the Citadel wasn't even 1AA. However, that Arkansas team was not coming off back-to-back top 10 seasons. They were not ranked number 8 at the time.
It was a mediocre Razorback squad.
Right. Nobody expected that team to be in the national championship hunt. Arkansas was not a they weren't a 30-point favorite, as far as I know. Those are factors that lead to this being the worst loss ever. And I know you said you didn't disagree with me, but I want to go ahead and lay the case out here. Because I know there are people that disagree that still, mm-hmm. you know, maybe look at that Texas game or look at the Citadel. The other difference between the Citadel loss and today, besides the where Arkansas's program was perceived to be going into the ULM game, is the money at stake now, the exposure at stake. You didn't have to worry about this in 1992. You didn't have to worry about College Game Day coming to your campus. And then at the last minute, because you can't beat ULM, they pull their – I mean, they were on the way here.
Yeah.
I don't know how many thousands upon thousands of dollars they lost – but ESPN was headed here. They had to reverse course to go to Knoxville. So just in terms of the embarrassment of the loss, ULM's printing up T-shirts, Adam.
Yeah.
Shock and the rock. We wanted it more. I mean, that's – so to
that's
me –
that's the knife twist right there.
Right.
We wanted it more.
So to me, you could lose to Alabama 50 to nothing. How is that any different than what Arkansas has done to Alabama in the past? I mean, they're 0-4 against Saban in the Bobby Petrino era. They lost by an average of 22 points a game. It's not like that could get any worse for them. But losing to ULM, unless, of course, I mean, at the end of the year, maybe we're looking at ULM. Maybe they're this year's, you know, Boise State or Houston.
that would be as much of a gift as Arkansas fans could ask for. But it's so funny to me, with the game this weekend, you juxtapose these two programs. You put them side by side, and they couldn't be more opposite right now. I mean, Nick Saban is so notorious for running the tightest ship. Everything runs a certain way. It's the Saban way, and it's the right way. Everything relies on a steady defense and a steady run game, and then you throw the pass on top of that. Boy, Arkansas is in the exact situation almost across the board. The coaching situation is completely in flux.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever percentage chance John L. Smith had of keeping the job beyond this 10-month contract is now wiped away.
Yes.
Which probably means the entire coaching staff will no longer be here next year. They're going to start fresh.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stop anybody on defense. They can't run the ball to win a game against a Sun Belt team in the second half. And they can't protect their quarterback. This is as much of a dumpster fire as I can remember.
Yeah. I mean, look, the one thing that Arkansas has going for them is this. They are about to be three games into the season. So after the Alabama loss on Saturday.
Which we all assume would be a loss. Now, it does kind of fit the Arkansas playbook to somehow come out and win this game, just but no,
and it fits the John L. Smith playbook where you lose to a you lose to a bad team 1 week and then the next week you come in and you knock off a Notre Dame team. You know, so maybe this can happen. So let's not completely discount that. But regardless of what happens against Alabama, there's still nine games after this Saturday. So there is theoretically time to, you know, get guys healthy, at least, you know, Tevin Mitchell and Tyler Wilson, get them healthy, get Jason Peacock in the starting lineup at tackle where he belongs, make some other adjustments, move Tenarius Wright back to defensive end and figure out something else at middle linebacker.
You think so?
Possibly. There's still time to make some adjustments and make some moves. So there's nine games left.
But for what end game? Because at this point, you're so far behind the eight ball, and you're looking like a team. If they play remotely like they did on Saturday, they're going to win six games this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the more this season unravels, it's going to be such a snowball effect because you have so many guys who will turn their eyes to the next level and doing what is most important to keep themselves healthy and prepare themselves, you know, to get drafted and play in the NFL. At what point do they just throw out, you know, all of our team goals we initially said are washed away. Who cares? I'm just going to go out and get mine and stay healthy. Why should Tyler Wilson go out and play in front of this shaky line against the best defense in the country? We saw how bad they murdered him last year in Tuscaloosa, and LSU did in Baton Rouge. I mean, Louisiana Monroe did that in Little Rock, and they have half the defense that Alabama does.
Let me offer some unsolicited advice to the Arkansas coaching staff. Do not play Tyler Wilson this week at all under any circumstance.
No matter what. No matter if the doctors clear him today.
If you get into the game on Saturday and Alabama has run through Brandon Allen, Brandon Mitchell, Brian Buhner, Eric Bennett, who played quarterback in high school that's now at safety, even if you were at that point, you do not put Tyler Wilson into this game for the exact reason I was saying a minute ago. There's nine games left after Alabama. There's still time to make this a respectable season. I don't know that Arkansas can go on a nine-game run. I know their chances of going on a nine-game run after Alabama are much better if Tyler Wilson is 100% healthy and you have him the rest of the way. You know, I think a lot of people are going to say that's a coward's way out. You don't want to operate out of fear. I understand where you're coming from. I just don't think the smart play for your season and for your quarterback who sacrificed a lot to come back this year, I do not think it's the smart play or the fair play to put him out there this weekend.
Boy, that would be an unpopular choice, I would imagine. You know, this is a sold out game, has been sold out for weeks. I'd be surprised if it's full on Saturday, just because of the chain of events that have happened here. But man, for the people that do show up and all the people that are going to be watching on TV, if they see Tyler Wilson on the sidelines, whatever slim support John L. Smith had would evaporate pretty quickly.
Why? You're taking the best step to salvage the season that you
The season's already
could.
Sunk.
It's
particularly if Alabama murders you on Saturday.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say it's sunk. I mean, you have nine games left after this one.
Yeah, but like I said before, for what cause? You're not getting anywhere you thought you could go. Are you trying to salvage the Liberty Bowl here? I mean,
well, you're trying to salvage some sort of bowl. You're trying to. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you say there's. And what's the end game? Well, here's the end game. I mean, Paul Petrino, Paul Haynes, Tabor Johnson, everybody short of Tim Horton and Bobby Allen are out the door, most likely.
Yeah.
Well, the end game for them is. They've still got to work beyond this year. Now, it's great that that Jeff Long locked them up through beyond the bowl game. It's great that he promised them not just a bowl bonus, but a longevity bonus if they ride it out through the bowl game. That's fantastic. But those guys are going to have to be employed next year. And I just think – I think the end game for them is you've got to make yourself as attractive as possible, either to whatever coach comes in here or to other employers outside of Arkansas.
Okay, but now you're talking about individual goals.
Mm-hmm.
You've thrown away team goals, right?
No, you're not.
Because why should the coaches worry about their longevity and their future, but not the players? Players need to focus on winning games as a team. Shouldn't Tyler Wilson be focusing on the draft? Shouldn't Nile Davis be focusing on the draft at that point?
No, I mean, all these guys benefit. I mean, even Tyler and Nile and Kobe Hamilton and you know, Alvin Bailey and Travis Swanson, Chris Gregg, these guys that are probably headed to the NFL, or at least prior to the season were projected as guys who would go to the NFL. I mean, they do benefit from having a good year. There's no benefit to them to going out and tanking. I mean, there's no benefit whatsoever, because the film doesn't lie. And if somebody's going out there and playing at half speed just to try to save themselves for the NFL, that's going to pop up on film. That's going to haunt those guys. So I do think individual goals can be achieved by this team winning games and people doing whatever they can to win. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, yes, they need to salvage individual goals, but it's all accomplished by this team not going 6-6.
Okay, for argument's sake, how do the Razorbacks pull it off against Alabama? What has to take place?
Is it too late to sign players?
Well, Hunter Henry going to come in and Alty Tenpenny? And
well, they don't. I mean, you know, it'd be nice to have those guys. No, they need to sign some offensive linemen. They need three or four quality corners that put out there.
The secondary is so brutal.
I mean, it was, you know, I feel bad for those guys. I mean, because it was through no fault of their own. I mean, they're here. That was a thin position to begin with, and now your best corner is out, and Tevin Mitchell, and we don't know how long he's out. So now you've got guys who were battling for the other corner spot are now starting, and Kalon Kelly-Brew and Darius Winston. I mean, it's the secondary's got some issues. And, you know, my argument to you when we started this thing a couple weeks ago was the secondary can have some flaws but get by as long as the defensive line is what we think it's going to be.
And it's not.
And it's not. So, I mean, now we're back to the defense again. But let's not – I mean, look, let's not pin this all on the defense.
No, there is not a member of the team or the coaching staff that is not to blame for that loss on Saturday. Across the board, everybody failed. Everybody.
Yeah.
Including Tyler Wilson when he played.
Oh, now that seems unfair. I mean, that guy's getting
– Think about the beginning of that game. How many throws did he miss in the first two series would have been touchdowns?
Yeah, I mean, he was all over the place to coming out, but then he comes out, he takes a couple hits. I mean, his two best throws of the day came as he was just getting creamed. They get a touchdown, you know, they tie the game, then they go up. They're up 21-7 when he comes out of the game. I mean, I don't know that you can pin it on him. He may be the one – maybe he's the one guy. Or, I mean, maybe you're right. They didn't execute coming out of the gate. He misses some throws. That sets the tone for the day. I'm more interested in the play calling.
I totally agree. Paul Petrino needs to shoulder as much of this as anybody, including more than John L. Everyone wants to blame John L. Turn your sights to Paul Petrino. How do you only run the ball six times after taking a 28-7 lead early in the second half? They ran the ball six more times over a quarter and a half plus overtime against a Sun Belt team. Now, when asked about it, he says, well, they were blitzing 70% of the downs. They were loading eight in the box every play. We felt like we were banging our head against a wall. Let's just throw over it. Well, you can try that for a little while, but when mm-hmm. you realize throwing over it's not working and they're slowly catching up and that clock is not running, if you cannot impose your will against the ULM Warhawks, you have no chance to run to win in an SEC game. No chance.
When you wind up going three and out in 19 seconds. That's the point when you've got to go, okay, this is clearly not working the way we're trying to attack this.
That's astonishing.
And I understand beating your head against the wall, and you don't want to feel like you're running into a wall, and you know there was no room to run. I get all that. But you weren't taking any time off the clock. And then you wind up in a situation, and I don't have the play-by-play in front of me, but you wind up in a situation, I believe, with 45 seconds left where ULM has the ball and a chance to go down and tie the game.
Yeah, they scored in the final minute. So that tells you everything you need to know about what running some clock would have done for this game. They scored in the final minute of regulation to tie the game. I mean, run the ball.
Yeah.
You've got a running back who everyone's put on this pedestal as being, you know, a Heisman candidate, who frankly hasn't looked anything like it. And you've got Dennis Johnson, who's averaging 7 yards a carry right now. And you're not running the ball. It's pathetic. That's the word I keep coming back to. It's pathetic.
It was bad. It was really bad. I still, and I know you're going to disagree with me, because a lot of people disagree with me on this. I wrote immediately after the game for ArkansasSports360.com. I wrote, and I was very upfront. I said, look, the players got outplayed. They were out-physicaled. The coaches didn't do them any favors with the play calls. They got out-schemed. But this is simple cause and effect, people. This is for every action, there is a reaction, okay? If Bobby Petrino is not selfish, Arkansas is not in this mess. This is the loss is certainly on the people who took part in the game Saturday. But Bobby Petrino has got to shoulder some of this blame. This is the staff that he put in place. These are the players he recruited, and his selfishness cost Arkansas this season. Okay, as I wrote on Saturday, this is a program that should be hitting its peak under Bobby Petrino after 5 years, and instead we're looking at a program that feels very much like it's hitting the breaking point.
And that's the whole thing with this loss. It's not just about killing this season. The reach of the effects from this loss are long, because now the coaching staff is going to be wiped out, and they're going to bring a whole new regime in, which basically hitting the reset button. It's going to damage recruiting, which affects seasons, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now. It's just bad, bad, bad. And you're right. A lot of that stems from Petrino's mistakes, but not just his mistakes getting in trouble and getting fired, but clearly, he didn't recruit the type of talent it takes to have a good defense in the SEC. Now, did they have good defensive performances under Bobby Petrino? Sure.
They did?
Some. Against, like, Tennessee and South Carolina, but not against Alabama or LSU, except for one LSU game in Little Rock a couple years ago.
Yeah, they still gave up over 20 points in that game.
What was the final in that game, like 28-20? Does that sound right?
I mean, yeah, I have to remember. It's not terrible.
It's not terrible. But, you know, they were up, what was it, 14-3 at Baton Rouge last year and got blown out after that.
They just
don't have the talent.
31-23 was that LSU game we were trying to think of in Little Rock.
Okay.
There are some long-reaching effects here. However, I think there's this idea that the coaching staff, you know, at some point will shut it down. And you mentioned the recruiting and the impact this could have on recruiting. I mean, these guys have – I mean, they've got – if they know – I mean, again, here's a little bit of unsolicited advice to the coaching staff. I mean, if they hope to get quality jobs and take care of their families and you know, have a viable career after this year, they've got to continue to recruit. I mean, they've got to have relationships with players, whether they wind up on staff at Arkansas or they wind up getting picked up elsewhere, or maybe when Bobby Petrino gets hired by, you know, Idaho or Kentucky or whoever. they want to be able to have some players that they can take with them. So the idea that everybody will completely shut it down, I don't know if I buy that. I think that has to be how they have to approach it. They can't completely shut it down, especially when it comes to recruiting. But I certainly understand why that would be a fear if this continues on the path that it appears to be headed.
Any scenario Arkansas wins this weekend?
No.
Six Alabama turnovers?
I don't know. I just have a really hard time imagining the team that we saw, you know, give up 24 to Jacksonville State, give up 34 and 550 yards to Louisiana Monroe. You know, that's giving up over 320 yards of passing per game. I just 120 yards rushing per game. I have a hard time imagining a scenario where that team beats Alabama. And I think after talking to some folks around the country, I think Alabama may be a wee bit inflated because of that Michigan win. But I still think they're one of the best teams in the country.
Right.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just telling you I have a really hard time imagining that it could happen.
If Tyler Wilson doesn't play, I give them a 0% chance. Zero. If Tyler Wilson does play, I give them about a 3% chance. And a lot of cards would need to fall the right way, and they would need quite a bit of luck. If Tyler doesn't leave that game, they probably don't lose. So the sky is probably not falling quite as hard as it is right now, but I still wouldn't think they had much of a shot against Alabama. 550 yards is such a staggering amount. I had to look up when the last time Arkansas gave up 500 yards. You know, they've given up a lot of points and stuff in the last few years, but you had to go back all the way to 2007, mm-hmm. the triple overtime game against LSU, which was, 50-48 or something like that. That was the last time they gave up more than 550 yards. It took three overtimes to reach that amount. Not the Georgia shootout in Fayetteville, not the Auburn scoring 60-plus under Cam Newton, none of the beatdowns in 08 by Bama and Florida, none of those passed 550 yards. But the Warhawks of Louisiana Monroe did it against this defense. That is awful. Awful.
Sure.
And they're still talking about, we got to tackle better. Tackle better? Is this high school football? You're teaching the fundamentals of a form tackle? These are kids that got scholarships to an SEC program to play defense, and they don't know how to tackle? I mean, I'm dumbfounded.
Yeah.
They don't know how to tackle, and they don't know where to stand during a play. They're out of position. The running lanes are wide. The receivers are open. They're not turning the ball over. They have one turnover in each of the first two games, which is they should be having three against each of those teams. This defense is a train wreck. And the offense, without Tyler Wilson, is not good enough to overcome it in the SEC. Bottom line. And so now you've already got one loss. Let's go ahead and chalk up Alabama and LSU. That's three losses. You got to go on the road to tough games like A&M and South Carolina and Mississippi State. Wow, all of a sudden you're looking at, do we already have six losses if we can't win those games? And then you're hoping you hold serve against Tulsa and Kentucky and
Rutgers,
Ole Miss and Rutgers. You know, this could easily be a six-win team, which is so sad considering where we all were 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that was people, though, and I'll lump myself in this category to a degree, people not being willing to look at the things that were right there in front of them. I started the podcast talking about this, people assuming that you could lose, four of your best playmakers on defense and that it wouldn't make any sort of difference.
Yeah, but I think we all thought the new regime on defense would make enough of an impact,
right,
be putting people in the position to succeed. And I could argue the opposite has happened. They're worse now under Paul Haynes than they were ever under Willie Robinson. But is it because of the scheme or is it because of the players?
Well, I mean, you lost the only guy in the history of Arkansas to lead, you know, in tackles four consecutive years. Now, the system, I'm sure, was designed, you know, to funnel tackles Jerry Franklin's way. But he leads the team in tackles for 4 years. Jake Beckett's a third-round pick, a defensive end. Jericho Nelson is a guy who, you know, was always around the football making plays, even though he was undersized. And then Tremaine Thomas was a guy who didn't have a great senior year, you know, but was good for coming up with some interceptions and some fumble recoveries and things of that sort. So, I mean, you lost four really, really critical pieces of that defense. And, you know, the warning signs were there. And
we were all blind.
Yep.
We drank the Kool-Aid.
And I'll be quite honest with you. I mean, I know, you know, I pin a lot of this on the former head coach, but I think it's also remarkable when you think about the job that he did marketing this program, and certainly, you know, the folks in the marketing and media relations departments, you know, had a big hand in this, but Bobby's confidence and the respect that people had for him, you know, really elevated the opinion of this program across the country to the point, and I got into it with a friend of mine the other day about this, and he got really upset with me. Arkansas finished at the midway point of its half of the conference last year and still finished in the top 10. And that is as much about the play on the field as it is the job that Bobby Petrino did marketing this program, to the point that people thought the program was at such a level that it could withstand him leaving, you know, four critical losses on defense, three guys leave for the NFL at the wide receiver position. I mean, we all bought into this idea that the program was, you know, really at this outstanding point. Bobby probably could have won 9 or 10 with this team. But the fact that we bought into this as another run at a national championship, that's why Jeff Long was so adamant about keeping this staff intact and bringing in John L. Smith. I mean, we all bought into this idea, and I think you got to give Bobby credit for building up the perception of the program.
Yeah, not that the fan base didn't appreciate Bobby while he was here, but gosh, you know, don't know what you've got till it's gone. Certainly rings so true right now. I mean, for all the flaws Bobby had, no one's remembering those right now. They're only remembering the good things.
Well, and, you know, the thing for Bobby, quite frankly, and I was just having this discussion with a buddy of mine at lunch, 34-31 loss to Louisiana Monroe in overtime just made Bobby Petrino millions of dollars and accelerated the timetable on his hire.
Yeah, you're probably right. And there's no shortage of programs looking for a coach every year. It's just a matter of which one will roll the dice, which one will pony up the dough and risk the PR hit you could take by hiring a guy with Bobby's checkered past. It could be an SEC team. It could be Kentucky.
It could be.
It's going to be somebody.
Yeah, I mean, somebody. I just think he probably helped himself tremendously. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the course of the season if they get the ship righted. But as it stands right now, the program is probably in a worse place than Bobby's going to be at the end of this year.
All right. Well, that was 30 plus minutes of depressing football talk. Give us something positive. What is there anything positive on this team right now? Anything?
You know, Friday afternoon they're going to have a ceremony.
No. I don't want to talk about the football facility. I'm talking about real X's and O's, the depth chart, the players, the coaches. Is there anything good to highlight right now? And be honest, because if the answer is no, it's pretty telling.
Well, I think nothing that would surprise anyone, I don't think. I mean, Chris Gregg and Kobe Hamilton have been really good.
Yeah, but who's going to be throwing them the ball on Saturday?
Dennis Johnson is looking really good at running back. averaging over 7 yards a carry.
What's the matter with Nile? Nile doesn't look like Nile. No, is it the line or is it Nile?
I think it could be both. I think, you know, one thing, and I got a text from a buddy who had listened to the Showground that first week, and then he texted me in the second quarter the other night against ULM, and he said, I thought you told me Nile was hitting the hole really well.
He was in practice.
He looked great, and I guess that's the difference between knowing contact's coming or knowing it's not coming. So I just think, you know, he likened it the other night when we talked to him to Tiger Woods taking a layoff from golf, and it just takes your body time to get readjusted to everything. I hope Nile can make a quicker transition back to form than Tiger Woods has. But I thought it was an interesting analogy to make in that, you know, there's muscle memory involved, and it's not as simple as just, all right, I'm back to running a 4.3 and squatting, you know, 1 million pounds, and now I'm going to go run for 1,000 yards. There's still some things that his body's got to get used to out there.
But here's the thing. In regards to his career at Arkansas, time is not on his side. Sure, he's got the rest of his career at the next level, just like Tiger's got the rest of his career until he retires. He's got now. Mm-hmm. And now is here with Alabama. So if you don't have it now, don't even bother because time is out.
Man, you were really cranky today. I thought we were talking about good things.
Well, that didn't last long, did it?
And now you're back to your complaining again. Yeah.
The team's just
Dylan Breeding had a really great punt the other night where that they downed at the one, and then I think Monroe promptly drove the field.
Well, now you're getting me excited. You're talking about the punter.
All right,
I think we need to change the subject.
Let's change the subject.
Okay.
On the spot.
On the spot. Oh, no.
Are you ready?
I'm not ready, so you go ahead.
Okay. I'm just curious, like, if you could only eat one thing the rest of your life, or if you were told you have to lock yourself in a room with one food and then just eat yourself until you die, what food would you pick?
Eat myself until I – that is weird.
No, not eat yourself, but eat until – like, eat until you explode. What's the one thing, like, you could just keep eating and eating and eating?
All right. Well, that's an easy answer for me. I grew up in Wichita, Kansas. There is a Chinese restaurant about three turns from my house.
And who doesn't immediately think of Chinese food in Wichita, Kansas?
Well, you know, I mean, everybody. But the place is called Yen Ching. There is a dish there called garlic chicken that is heaven on a plate. You put that on a plate with some fried rice, and I'll eat that every meal, every day, for the rest of my life. I would do that. I wouldn't even think twice about it. I yearn for it. I only get back to Wichita like once, maybe twice a year. And I eat there probably twice. If I'm there for 3 days, I'll eat there twice because it's awesome.
Sidebar, cold Chinese food?
No.
Really?
No, I got to heat it up.
There's nothing better than cold Chinese food.
Yeah, there is. Warm Chinese food.
No, I don't know. Cold Chinese food's fantastic, as is cold pizza.
Cold pizza's good.
Which brings me to my item that pizza? I could eat until I die. Yeah, pizza. I love pizza. It doesn't even have to be good pizza. It can be quality gourmet pizza. It could be Totino's frozen pizza that you can get for 99 cents
eaten plenty of those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Love pizza. It reminds me also of a time that when I was in college, had a girl that I was hanging out with, and I made the mistake of accepting her challenge to eat pizza at the local buffet. It was a national chain. They had a buffet, lunch buffet. It was like $5, all you can eat, and a drink. And she challenged me. This was a tiny girl, too. This was not like, you know, Large Marge. This was,
Pee Wee Herman, Large Marge?
Yeah. This was this was a normal-sized college girl, good-looking girl. And she said, all right.
Was this your girlfriend at the time?
We were hanging out.
Hanging out?
We were hanging out. She threw down the gauntlet. She said, I want to see if you can beat me in a pizza-eating contest. And I thought, this is nothing.
You lost, didn't you?
We agreed to call it... We agreed to call it a draw after 15 pieces.
15 slices of pizza?
Each.
And like how big were these slices? Like,
I mean, they were normal sized pieces of pizza.
So like if I ordered a medium pizza or a large pizza, they were those size.
So we each basically put down two large pizzas.
That's disgusting.
It was awesome. But yeah, it was pretty disgusting also.
Now see, for me, I gotta have some ranch with my pizza. I dip my pizza in the ranch. You do that?
Oh yeah, ranch. You know what's really good? Thousand Island dressing.
I've not seen that. There is a place in Lawrence, Kansas, at the University of Kansas. There's a bar there that sells pizza, and they put honey on their pizza. It's really popular. It's a place called The Wheel. It's a very popular bar in Lawrence.
Yeah, I've heard that.
It's interesting.
I've heard about doing that. I'm not big on honey, so I don't know how that would go, but sure. I'll try it. The other thing, by the way, that I would eat just myself silly on is ice cream. I can't possibly.
Well, I mean, do you know anybody that doesn't like pizza or ice cream? Anybody?
Yes.
Somebody that doesn't like pizza or doesn't like ice cream, and it's not allergic.
No, yeah, I know people that legitimately do not like either, which I find really odd. And
is un-American.
It is un-American. I worked in an ice cream parlor for.
I worked in an ice cream parlor once.
Really?
Summer. Yeah, when I was in college, I spent a summer. I had an internship, and then I worked at a Cold Stone Creamery on the side.
Oh, wow! Yeah. I spent 3 years at a Baskin Robbins.
Three—that's a long time.
Yeah, college.
Can you name all 31 flavors?
I can. Oh.
You know what? Don't try. I don't want to.
No, we won't do that. Because I had a brother-in-law who worked at an Italian restaurant, big national Italian chain, that has great breadsticks.
I hate that place.
The breadsticks are the redeeming quality. But he worked there for like part of a summer and was so disgusted by it that he never, like, he went years and years without eating Italian and has never set foot in one of those places again. I worked at Baskin Robbins for 3 years. I could eat like an entire 3 gallon tub or 10 gallons or however many is in one of those tubs of any flavor but pistachio almond.
You'd get pretty fat if all you ate was pizza and ice cream.
Yeah.
You'd be rolling out of here.
Yeah, especially at my age. Yeah.
I can't believe you know somebody that doesn't like pizza and you know somebody that doesn't like ice cream.
Not the same person.
I would hope not.
Yeah.
Because that would be one unhappy person.
What kind of life would they lead?
A sad one.
Very sad, miserable life. I'm probably one of the people that was tweeting negative things to the players after the game.
Yeah, that was pretty uncalled for. And you know what? Shame on the fans that were doing that, but also the players need to be smart enough to not engage into that. I'm not going to name names, but there were some that were going back with the fans, and it's just like that's not helping anybody or anything. It's just making things worse.
Yeah. Ah, but now we're all depressed again. Let's talk about ice cream and Wang Chung in Wichita.
Yin Ching.
Okay.
Yin Ching in Wichita, Kansas. It's on Rock Road.
Uh-huh.
Rock and Central. Strongly recommended. Yin Ching. Get the garlic chicken. There's a waiter there named Danny. Tell him I sent you. He actually knows who I am.
Why does it not surprise me that a Chinese restaurant in Wichita would have a waiter named Danny?
He's Asian. He just goes by Danny. I don't know what his real name is. Could be some crazy name.
I feel like we're about to get in trouble.
Yeah. Danny's a good guy. All right, let's not hate on Danny. I don't have a tremendous on the spot for you today, but I'm more just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
What is the greatest sporting event you've witnessed live?
Greatest sporting event that I have witnessed live.
It doesn't even have to be like I was at Wimbledon. It could have been some high school game that was just so amazing and crazy because this and this and this happened. Just what was the coolest, most amazing sporting event you've ever seen in person?
I don't know about a specific event. I will say this. I think we get accustomed to watching the NFL from our recliners or couches, and it's as fast and as strong as they look on TV, mm-hmm. It doesn't even begin to translate. A few years back, I proclaimed to be a Cowboys fan, but I haven't watched a game in over a year because their quarterback really upsets me. So I've just stopped watching. but I'm a Cowboys fan, grew up a Cowboys fan, so my wife surprised me with tickets to a Cowboys game. I believe they played the Eagles. It was a Monday Night Football game. I think that's right. No, it was the Giants. It doesn't matter.
How long ago was this?
It's been 3 or 4 years, 5 years, since I got married 8 years ago. I don't know. Sometime in the last 8 years. Why are you hassling me, man?
I'm just trying to paint the picture, all right?
Stop hassling
me. For the listener. You're the one getting all flustered here. Tell your story.
So she surprised me with tickets to the game, but the cool part was getting, you know, passes to go on the field before the game. And not being there in any kind of working capacity, just getting to go and watch warm-ups and being on the sidelines. And just seeing, like, even covering college football, you just have no concept of the speed and the size of the next level. So that's why we call it on the spot. I could probably think of a better, like, specific sporting event down the road, or, like, you know, a really thrilling triple overtime high school game that I covered way back when. But just actually getting to see, like, the NFL that up close, and that's pretty impressive. People, I don't think people have any concept of the speed and the size of those guys.
They're pretty amazing. They're from another planet, basically. You could say the same about NBA players, too. Like, when you see them in person, they're all so tall that when you watch them on TV, because in relative terms, they all look relatively the same. But when you're there and in person and you see somebody like LeBron James or whoever, who is 6'8", you know, 200 and whatever pounds, and can just glide like that and just fly up and down the floor and throw down awesome dunks. Like, it's the same with the NFL. I mean, these guys are playing at such high velocity and just colliding with each other so violently and then getting up and doing it again. It's pretty, you know, awe-inspiring at times. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It is. We agree.
Best sporting event I ever saw live. I was in the stands at the Rose Bowl for the 05 championship game.
Oh.
Texas and USC.
Yep.
Vince Young against Leinart and Bush. Of course, that was arguably one of the best football games ever played in the history of mankind.
Maybe the best.
Yeah. You know, what, 41-38, I believe, was the final. Texas coming from behind. I mean, That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. Sadly, a lot of the sporting events that I have seen in person were work related. So
yeah,
this question would almost be like asking an accountant, like, what is the most awesome, you know, accounting form you've ever filled out?
Well, I mean, gosh, where do I even begin with that? I mean. Funny story about attending that Rose Bowl. A few days earlier, I'm in Vail, Colorado with my family on a ski trip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm skiing with my dad and my sister. And we stop for lunch at one of the lodges on top of the mountain, you know. And as we're taking our skis off and walking in, we hear people that are coming out. And that is my phone ringing. We hear people coming out of the restaurant mumbling amongst themselves. Did you see O.J. Simpson in there? Was O.J. Simpson in there? Is that who I just saw?
Well,
anybody that knows my father knows that he has no shame and will do anything for the most part. He hears this, beelines into the restaurant. You know, he's like doing that neck craning thing where he's looking over everybody. Finds O.J.
Yeah.
Walks straight through the restaurant. There happens to be a table open next to O.J.'s table. Walks right up to him, sticks his hand out and says, "Hey, Juice, how's it going?" So he strikes up a conversation with O.J., and we claim that table next to him. So we end up having lunch right next to O.J. Simpson, shoot the breeze with him for like 30 minutes or 45 minutes, you know, about all sorts of stuff, mainly football, because, you know, he's went to USC, and we told him we were going to the Rose Bowl, you know, in a couple of days, and, you know, talked about Reggie Bush and this and that and the other. Couldn't have been a nicer guy.
Really?
Couldn't have been more courteous, more happy to just sit there and chat with us, blah, 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 blah.
Doesn't he kind of have to be?
That's exactly my point. As I said to my family later that day, you know, when you get away with murder, aren't you kind of socially required to be about as kind as you possibly can from then on?
Yes. Which is a great dovetail into a story. Recently, when I went to Oregon, and a buddy of mine came out there with me, and we're eating breakfast the day before the day of the Oregon game, and we're sitting at this little cafe that's full of like hippies and these two guys with long hair on acoustic guitars,
sure,
singing, and it's all like, you know, vegan tofu, egg white omelets,
organic, I'm sure.
Yes, all organic and natural. And I was scared to death when I ordered bacon, that someone was going to come out and scream, "Meat is murder."
No. Meat is delicious.
Meat is very delicious. So we're sitting at this place. I mean, this out-of-the-way place. It's definitely not, like, touristy at all. And we are paying our bill, and we turn around, and it's Tony Dungy.
Really?
Yes. Former Super Bowl-winning Colt. The coach of the Indianapolis Colts, and he is no lie, he's in like blue Colt blue like shorts, like coaching shorts and tennis shoes and an NFL pullover. His son plays at Oregon.
Okay.
So he gets seated out on the patio with the hippies strumming their guitar, and my buddy's like, "Oh dude, I mean Tony Dungy, I gotta go, like, he's really cool. I got to go meet him."
He's supposed to be like the nicest man in the world.
Right. So my buddy goes out there and introduces himself and he says, "Hey, I'd love to get a picture with you." And Tony Dungy was like, "Yeah, probably not."
Oh. Cold shouldered by Tony Dungy?
I got a picture,
that's just
though.
Not right.
I like paparazzied it with the iPhone from across the way. So I got a photo of my buddy like gesturing to Tony Dungy. And Tony Dungy with his menu in hand just kind of looking at my buddy like, "Really?
Wow. Really? I can't believe Tony Dungy big leagued your friend."
Tony Dungy, big leagued my friend. O.J. Simpson invited your family to breakfast.
Yeah, and at one point he went to the restroom and like, you know, all of his ski gear is there, and I'm pretty sure my dad picked up his glove to see if it would fit. Dead serious. And for the rest of the day, kept coming up with Johnny Cochran jokes like, "If the ski glove don't fit, you know, you must have quit," or whatever jokes he was making that day. To him, there was you know, no diminishing value to that.
That's fantastic. I hope that lives on forever in the Alter family.
And now OJ's in jail.
Yeah.
For stealing his own memorabilia back.
What a sad, sad turn of events for OJ.
You know, I'm too young to have watched him play.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when we were sitting there having lunch with him, you know, Reggie Bush was king of the mountaintop at the time as far as running backs. And my dad was telling OJ, "Look, Reggie Bush is good, but anybody that compares him to you had never watched you run." And you know, my dad told me about it later. Like, OJ was just amazing as a running back.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is a shame that somebody who had it all can screw up so bad multiple times and ruin his legacy. Oh, although man, the Naked Gun movies are pretty good.
They are. So there you go. It's so depressing all over again. OJ, I watched the car. I remember the car chase, which wasn't really a chase, but the, you know, the white Bronco.
What was it, 94?
It was somewhere in there. I was in college, I think, at the time, and I remember sitting up. I'm a news junkie, so I remember, like, sitting up for, like, 24 hours.
Wow, you were in college? I was in, like, fifth grade.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that.
How's that make you feel?
OJ also partially responsible for the Kardashians.
Kardashians, yeah.
Yeah.
A plague on society.
Yeah. So, thanks, OJ.
You're a real winner.
He should be in jail for that.
He should. Forget murder. Forget armed robbery. He sicked the Kardashians on American culture. That is a crime punishable by death, sir.
Yeah.
Are you going through Breaking Bad withdrawal? Because I am.
Yeah, it's been rough, man.
It's really bad.
I mean, I guess we have to. I saw a sports writer friend of mine in Mississippi, Brandon Marcello, who's a
Brandon. Used to cover the Hogs.
Yeah, huge Breaking Bad fan. And the Breaking Bad official Twitter account tweeted out, "Anybody else going through withdrawals?" And Brandon's response back was, "Maybe you shouldn't have a year-long wait in between halves
mid-seasons,
of the season."
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm definitely going through some withdrawal there because – I don't really have – there are a lot of other shows that we DVR and we watch. I've gotten, like, kind of sucked up in Big Brother. I watch that with the wife. We watch a lot of, like, comedies that come on that are all about to cycle back on. But in terms of something that I really am invested in watching,
mm-hmm.
I've never had a show like Breaking Bad other than WWF wrestling circa 99-2000.
Sure.
I used to like get mad at people for calling me when it was on.
I was big into wrestling like all my life until I got into high school. And like I was like a sophomore in high, like I would never miss Monday Night Raw.
Right.
Or like even when WCW got cooler than WWF for a while, like Monday Nitro, like
Wolfpack.
Yeah, NWO, woo. Every Monday would watch it.
Right.
And then I was like a sophomore in high school, and for some reason, like some school events or something, I missed it like two Mondays in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, all right, I guess I'm done. Eh. And just never went back.
Yeah.
Clean break. But yeah. Every once in a while, I'll flip over if I catch it on. And
a couple months ago, The Rock made his return to wrestling.
Yeah, he had WrestleMania.
Yeah, and so I watched, there was like a Monday night show, and I watched that.
Did you smell what he was cooking?
No.
No, he couldn't smell it? It wasn't smell-o-vision?
No.
Oh, that was dumb.
Wouldn't that be cool if you can invent that, though? Smell-o-vision? So anyway, the point being, we this thing's off the rails. This is much like, this is our own personal ULM 34, Arkansas 31.
Yeah, we should be pounding the run right now,
yeah.
But we're not.
No.
We just keep on throwing.
We're just throwing. We're just 19 second possessions, three and out. So the point I was trying to make was there are not a lot of shows. Like if I miss I stop everything I'm doing just to watch that show, that's what Breaking Bad was for me. And now it's gone until next summer. And I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, it sucks. Now, we've strongly recommended to the listeners to watch this show. They don't need to hear us strongly recommend that again. You mentioned a lot of shows are coming back in the typical fall cycle. They're not here yet. Let's give the listener a little homework, something maybe they haven't watched before that had an impact on your life that you think is a great show that maybe they could rip through a couple of DVDs here until fall TV comes back. What do you got?
Well, you couldn't rip through it in a couple weeks, but I mean, if you're looking to get invested in a show, I would highly recommend The Wire.
Oh, cosign. The Wire's great.
In fact, hit me up on Twitter. Maybe I'll loan my Wire discs out to you.
I own the first four seasons. I don't own the fifth season, although I should. But I am the same. If it requires me lending you my discs to watch this groundbreaking show, I will do it. It's pretty good. The same can be said for my homework assignment for the folks. A little something we like to call Arrested Development.
Oh, yes.
The funniest show in the history of television.
Ever.
They only made three seasons, which was really only like 2.5 seasons, because the network they were on, Fox, so royally screwed up marketing that show and pairing it with good shows on good nights of the week that it never could quite catch on despite winning countless awards and critics reviews and stuff. And now it's coming back.
Yeah.
On Netflix. They're doing a fourth season of like 10 or – I think they might even extended it to 13 episodes. And then beyond that, I think they're going to do a movie. Which I don't think the movie is set in stone yet. The episode's already in production. They've already started. But they're supposed to
– they say.
No, Jason Bateman tweeted a pic from the set one day.
Have you seen an episode yet?
Well, no, they're not out yet.
Okay.
How am I supposed to see an episode if they're not out yet?
I'm just telling you, I love Arrested Development.
They're in production. Ron Howard talked about it. Jason Bateman talked about it. Mitch Hurwitz talked about it. They've started.
Wouldn't it be just like them, though, to perpetuate this ridiculous hoax? I mean, they've been hinting.
No, that would be cruel.
They've been hinting that this show was coming back for, what, 4 years? Five years?
Well, it took a long time because it's a big cast, and they've all gone on to do a lot of things. So it took a while to get, particularly George Michael Cera, who spun off into a movie career. It was really hard to get him to commit the kind of time it takes to shoot this because he's got movie scripts coming his way all the time.
Right.
But they finally got the whole cast back together. They're in production on season four. It's only going to be available on Netflix, which I don't have. So I'm going to have to get that. But you can get the DVDs really cheap. I think Amazon was running a special earlier this week. You could buy all three seasons for like $26 or $27.
Do it.
Do it.
I'll give you the $27. One of you.
I won't.
Not all of you.
I won't, but Chris will. I'll let you borrow my DVDs because I've lent them out to multiple people and they all come back thanking me.
Adam will have you over to his house and you can sit on his sofa and watch with him and feed him popcorn.
Maybe if you bring the snacks. It's that good.
Yeah, no, I would. Adam co-signs The Wire. I co-sign Arrested Development. It's the funniest show on TV. You know, it's quirky and
very quirky.
You know, sometimes you have to watch an episode a couple times to pick up on all the little subtle accents of humor. But it is the perfect comedy.
That's exactly what I was going to say next. It's such a deep series as far as like the amount of jokes. You could watch every episode three times and pick up on jokes you didn't catch the first time or second time through because it's just they're everywhere. It's a masterpiece of television.
One of my favorite moments in that show, and you have recall for this kind of stuff. I can't remember what the episode was or what season it was. I just remember that George Michael is walking home dejected from school. And I think the name of the episode was like Charlie Brown.
No, it was called I know what you're talking about. It's a season two episode where they keep doing the like they're all walking head
right.
down.
So
good
my,
grief. It's called Good,
good
Grief.
Good Grief, yes. Yeah. So Michael Cera's walking home all dejected and his head's down. And on the front lawn of the house that he walks past is a beagle dog laying on the red doghouse, like Snoopy. There's so many little subtle things like that. It's remarkable television.
Come on! Job is the best. So that's your homework assignment. Watch The Wire. Watch Arrested Development.
Watch Arrested Development first.
Well, they're very different shows.
They're very different shows, and after ULM 34, Arkansas 31 in overtime, you need something to make you happy. You need something uplifting, something that'll make you laugh. Watch Arrested Development.
I couldn't agree more. Watch Arrested Development. All right, we're wrapping it up here, Chris. I mean, the fans need something to look forward to. Give them something they can read on 360.
Wow. Okay. Anything I'm going to write this week is probably going to depress you. But if you would like a look at you know what to expect in the Alabama game, what the ULM loss meant for Arkansas financially, potentially down the road, if you'd like to celebrate the new facilities that they're building, Arkansas's got a topping off ceremony for the Football Operations Center they're doing Friday. I'll have a report from that. We have our SEC power rankings, which will depress you because Arkansas, I'm sure, has plummeted from 3rd to 14th. I mean, you know, just our usual coverage. If for some reason you found your way onto the podcast and wanting Arkansas State talk, we've got plenty of Arkansas State coverage. So just the usual great stuff you'll find on ArkansasSports360.com.
Just because the season has gone down the toilet doesn't mean the Razorback Nation's coverage has. We'll continue to cover them better than every TV station in the state. Of course, we've got our Gear Up show Friday nights at 10:15, getting you all ready for the game day. And then we have our game day show. It's 11 to noon on Saturday. We'll be live over by the stadium. We'll have guests and features and game previews and all that good stuff. KNWA, KARK, I believe you can watch that stuff. Streaming online too, nwahomepage.com or arkansasmatters.com.
We only have one website. It's arkansasports360.com, so it's not as confusing.
Well, you know, we're in multiple markets here, Chris. So.
Well, we reach everybody. But you can find us on Twitter, ArkSports360. I'm at C Bon. We're on Facebook. And I promise you, not everything we do is going to be depressing.
No, but this week kind of called for it. I'm also on Twitter, Adam_Alter. Please hit us up with your feedback on the podcast. We do this for you. It's the Showgram. It's sports radio. You can listen to at your convenience. Take it where you want to go. Listen to it when you want to listen to it. That will wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Showgram. Chris, you have a parting thought.
I just want to tell the fans, in the words of Tupac, keep your head up. It gets better.
Wiser words have definitely been said. For Chris, I'm Adam. Thanks for listening. See ya.